today's message, Time to Spare. I'm not sure if there is time to spare or not. Most of you know, in fact, I'd say everybody here knows, that I had a little bit of health problem last February. January, cropped up in February. And I've been in cardiac rehab. Cardiac rehab at Altman West, it's 12 weeks, 36 sessions of getting together with a nurse, an exercise physiologist, I think. And I really don't know what that third person does, but she's there, and they're all great people, and they help you to learn about things like what you're supposed to eat, diet, nutrition, that kind of thing. They also deal with you kind of trying to teach you how to properly do your medications. And they also work with you around the idea of exercise, of physical activity, of trying to get your, is it called aerobics, going so that you breathe in and out more and your heart pumps more. And if you've known me for any length of time, you know that that aerobic part and that diet part and that physical activity part, if you really knew me, you'd know the medication part are all a challenge for me. When it comes to the exercise part, I have observed, however, something that they do. They started me off. I do two machines. They've got a bundle of machines you can do, but I do two machines. I do a little cycle, and then I get onto a treadmill. And I am very, very, very committed to the cycle and the treadmill. I don't want to do anything with any other machines because I don't want to learn anything else. I just want to do what I've got to do. But they started me off very easy. If you would, they started me off way down here. In fact, the first couple of weeks, I'd come home and say to Janice, this is not exactly what I thought it would be. This is not hard. And then I, over time, have figured out what they're doing. They take your blood pressure sometimes when you're on the machines. They got a heart monitor on you where they're watching you the whole time. They'll come up and ask you questions like, is that easy, comfortable, hard for you? And after those first couple of weeks, they began to do really some dirty tricks on me. On Thursday, they do a reassessment. And when you get on these machines, there are numbers and dials and buttons that you push. And they had me on that treadmill, for instance, at what was called M3. That's a level of activity. And they had the tilt, because you know a treadmill will go up and down, at zero. They started putting that tilt up higher. And they started making that activity harder. I think I'm now, I'm not sure if it's the bike or the treadmill, but one of those things, I'm at M14. And one day, the girl said to me, she hollered at me from over at the desk where they're at, she said, how's that feel? And I said, feels like you're mad at me. Because what I told you before was easy. I'm now sweating and I'm huffing and puffing and I'm bringing water bottles and thinking about bringing two water bottles and maybe some Gatorade, wondering if I can get off of the machine early and they won't notice. This past Thursday I was in there and they really gave me a run for my money. You ever notice that's kind of how life is? That you may go through a season where you think, man, I'm so glad there's nothing going on right now for me. But then it seems like somebody pushes the button, right? And it seems like all at once the whirlwind starts and the hurricane begins and the tornado arrives and chaos is in your midst. I want to talk to you a little bit about that today as we discuss the question of, do we have time to spare? I'm going to walk you through this passage one more time. And I know if you've ever been with me for a memorial or a funeral service, I always read John 14. It's a non-negotiable for me. I always am going to read this to folks and pretty much say the same things. I'm not going to say those things today. There's one point I really want to hit home with you. Jesus said, don't let your hearts be troubled. Why did he say that? Well, put a little context to this. In the chapter just before this, John 13, Jesus has told his disciples that he's going somewhere. He said, it's time for me to go away. And when you get into John 14, the verses after this, Jesus says a whole lot of this stuff about him going away. He'll say, it's necessary for me to go away. He says, if I don't go away, the Holy Spirit will not come. He just is really letting his disciples know that he's no longer going to be physically in the picture of their lives. And it raised a question for Peter. Peter said, hey, if you're going away, where are you going, and why can't we go? Peter's a little bit upset about what Jesus is saying here, and that precipitates or it initiates this passage that we're into. So Jesus says, not only to Peter, but to his disciples, and by extension to you and me, don't let your hearts be troubled. If you have faith in God, you can also have faith in me that it's going to be okay. And then specifically, Jesus says to his disciples, listen, in my Father's house, there's a lot of rooms. If that wasn't true, would I have told you that I'm going to come back and receive you because there's a place for you? Aren't you encouraged by the fact that God wants to have a place for us? We had a mattress swap out at our house, and the old mattress is standing in the spare bedroom. It's actually what we call Easton's room, and Easton came over the other day, and Jenna said, I've got to get that mattress out of that room, and I didn't want to fool with that. You know, I said, oh, can't he play down here? Can't he play out there? Can't he do this? Can't he do that? She said, no, he needs to go into his room, and we need to make room for him. So now the mattress is in my road. It's in my way because we made room for somebody else. Jesus says, Peter, disciples, church, don't worry about it. God's preparing a place. He told us he would. And that place is going to be for those who believe in him. And then Jesus says, and if I go and prepare that place for you, you can count on this. I'm going to come back and I'm going to receive you to where I am. You can be with me. And then he adds this little point in there, and you know the way to where I'm going. And again, just like Peter asked a question in John 13, Thomas raises his hand. And Thomas holds up his hand and says, Lord, wait, we don't know where you're going to. Didn't you hear Peter? He asked the question, and I'm going to reiterate it. We don't understand where you're going. How can we know the way to where you're going? And Jesus said, that's quite simple. I am the way. I'm the truth. I'm the life. You can't get to my Father except you go through me. You can't get to my Father except you go his way. You can't get to my Father except you go through his truth. And you can't get to my Father except you go through his life. And that is found in me, God's Son. Jesus said, you know what? You've known me. You've already known my Father. Thomas, don't say you don't know the way. You've been with me for 3 years. You know what my Father's like. You know where I'm going to. If you want to know what God's like, look at me. You'll see it. And from this point forward, you not only know him, but now you can say you've been eyewitnesses of him. You have seen him. Just like any good classroom, somebody else pops their hand up. It's Philip. And Philip says, well, show us the Father, and that'll be enough. You see, they still weren't quite getting it. Philip, Jesus just said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. You want to know what God's like? Look at his Son, Jesus. We are one and the same. You want to know what God's like? Take a good look at me. I've been with you for 3 years now, and it's time for me to go away and get a place ready for you, and you're now going to be in charge. You want to know what God looks like? You've been with God, because I've been here. Philip wasn't quite getting that. Philip says, well, if you show us God, we'll be satisfied. That'll be good enough for all of us. And look at what Jesus says to Philip. Jesus says, Philip, I put that word in there, his name in there, have I been with you so long and you still don't know me? Whoever has seen me has seen my Father. Philip, I don't understand how you can say, show me the Father. You've seen me, you've seen the Father. Church, just for a minute, those of you that are here, I want you to look real close at that ninth verse. Have I been with you so long? There's that element of time, right? Have I been with you so long? You hold that thought, we'll get back to it. Jesus says, don't you believe that I'm in the Father and the Father's in me? The words that I say to you, I don't speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does his works. Believe in me that I am in the Father and the Father's in me, or else believe on account of the works I've done. Truly, truly, I say to you, if you believe in me, you'll also do the things I've done. And get this, not only will you do those things, you'll do greater works. Because I am going to where my Father is. And Jesus says, let's go back to that verse for a minute. Greater works than these you'll do. I'm going to make a sad commentary right here that has not been through the editor, but I'm going to go ahead and spit it out right now. How tragic is it that the one that we claim to worship, the one who has died for us, the one who loves us more than anyone ever has said to us that we will do greater things than he's done. And my guess is we haven't done that yet. You don't have to buy that. I'm just thinking out loud. Jesus says, I'm going away. Church, implicit in what Jesus is saying in this passage is because he's going away, it's time for those that believe in him to do the things he's done. And not just the things he's done, greater things than he's done. Whatever you ask me in my name, I'll do that so that the Father can be glorified in me. If you ask me anything in my name, I'll do it. And that's the passage we read this morning. But I want to take you back just to one verse, that ninth verse that I stopped and pointed out to you. Have I been with you for so long, and you still don't know me? Philip, whoever's seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? I want you to look at that verse on the screen, and I want you to see that word, been. Jesus said to him, have I been? The word there in the Greek is the word eimi, and it means one that exists. It's the quality of existing. Jesus was not a wallflower. Jesus says, for 3 years, I've been with you. And you've not seen anything like this before in your life. That's actually why you're with me right now. Have I existed with you? And then look at the next word, so long. That word so has the idea of a considerable quantity of something, like so much, so long a time. It's the so emphasizes to us that it goes beyond what you would consider to be normal expectations. I mean, we have people come and go in our lives, and Jesus is pointing that out, but he's saying to his disciples, look, have I been with you? Have I existed with you this long, and you still don't know me? Have I existed with you for a time frame that nobody would have ever imagined? Can I tell you something about Jesus? Jesus never downsizes. Janice came home with Reese cups, which, by the way, I can't eat. And the Reese cups are thin Reese cups. Have you seen these? They're thin Reese cups. And I thought, well, why do they make thin Reese cups? And they want to sell you on the fact that, well, you like, you know, less chocolate and, yes, peanut butter. And I'm going to tell you something. Even though I haven't eaten one, I know better than that. I want all that chocolate, and I want all that peanut butter, and you do too. Jesus says, I'm going to exceed your expectations. I've been with you so long. I am not going to be mini Jesus. I'm not going to be a little bit of Jesus. You're getting the full deal. Have I been with you for such a long time? You know what that long means? It means like a period. If you can remember when you were in high school, or maybe you're in high school, and you had periods in school, you'd go to homeroom, then you'd go to English, then you'd go to government or whatever, you know, and on and on and on. This was the period Jesus was here. Jesus existed in this certain time frame for so long a time. And he's asking Philip, Philip, have I really been with you this long and you still don't know me? Let me clean that up for you a minute and put it this way. I've cut it down. I've edited the verse on the screen so you just see the majority of what I want you to see. Have I been with you so long? And you still don't know me. Now, I'm going to tell you, there was a piece of Jesus that was happy with what Philip was asking for. Because what did Philip say? He said, show us the Father, right? And that'll be enough, right? So Jesus has to be happy. There's at least a desire to know. But there's got to be a big disappointment also in how obtuse Philip is, how incredibly unaware he is of the fact that when he's standing there with his nose looking in Jesus' direction, he was actually already seeing God the Father. I think what probably astonished Jesus more than anything was that Philip could be with him for 3 years and miss the most obvious point. Jesus' existence on earth was God come on the earth. And you only got to look, church, at the next verse to get this. Because Jesus is going to say this. Don't you believe that I'm in the Father and the Father's in me? The words that I speak, I don't speak on my own authority. The Father who dwells in me. In his name I do his works and speak his words. You know, when John, by the way, we're in the book of John, began his gospel. You remember how it started? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. Did you catch that? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, but the Word was also with God. It's telling us exactly what Jesus is saying to his disciples right here. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. But then, strangely enough, just a little bit later in that first chapter, Jesus says this. No one has ever seen God. The only God who's at the Father's side, he's made him known. What's John telling us here? If you see Jesus, you've already seen God. You know what we humans like to do? We like to make images, don't we, for our God. We like to have, much like the people of old, we like to have these little images so we can worship them. God supersedes any image you could ever give. If you see a picture of Jesus in a church, that's not going to be it. If you see a cross in the front of a sanctuary or anywhere around somebody's neck, that's not going to be enough. And the reason is because Jesus is a person. God is expressed through the personality of who Jesus was. To do anything else, whether it's a cross or a symbol or a sign or whatever it is actually to diminish who God actually is. But we love our symbols. We love our little signs. Jesus made God known physically by his presence. That's, if you want to know how Jesus, the question I want to ask you today is, how has that presence affected you? But I'll tell you how it's affected others. The Apostle Paul in Colossians 1, verse 15 to 20, he wrote a great hymn there. I'm just going to read you the first verse of that hymn. Listen to what he says. He's the image of the invisible God. Think about that for a minute. If you've seen Jesus, you've seen the one you've never seen, and that's God the Father. Later, the writer of Hebrews would write this. He's the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature. If you've seen Jesus, you have seen God. His nature was lived out in that person who dwelt among you. So when Philip comes along and says, show us the Father and that'll be enough for us. And Jesus says, have I been with you for this long and you don't get it yet? Are you really not that smart, Philip? Are you missing the point? have I been with you this long? And you've not known me, Philip? My brother down in Florida, there was a period of time where I didn't see him for a long while just because of the busyness of life. And he had a little girl, you know, and she's a beautiful young lady, a mom herself now. We saw her when she was little, but a number of years went by where, you know, where young ladies and young men blossom, you know. They turn from youth into adults, and Megan did that, you know. And I can remember we went down there one time to see them, Janice and I, and we walked into their living room. Megan came around the corner. And I mean, here stood what used to be, you know, something about down this high. There stood this girl with long blonde hair, absolutely gorgeous, completely developed into a young lady. And the very unfortunate circumstance was she looked just like my brother. And my brother looked at me, and I didn't say a word. He just looked at me, saw the look on my face, and he said, "It's uncanny, isn't it?" I said, "Yeah, it really is." Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Don't you get it? Have I been this long with you? And you've missed that point. So church, I'm going to put a question up here. This is not the bottom line. This is just a question I want you to think about. What if the only knowledge of Jesus the world has is who we are? What if the only knowledge of Jesus that the world has is the way we act? What if the only knowledge of who Jesus is how we love each other? What if the only knowledge that the world has of what Jesus is like is the way that we forgive each other when there's a difficulty? What if the only image of the only understanding of who Jesus is that the world has is how we deal with our relationships with each other? Let me put that verse back up there for you, and I want you to think about it. Jesus said, "Have I been with you so long, and you still don't know me?" I've told you a little bit about, you know, my cardiac rehab, but I'm going to try to do this part quick for you because, again, it's talking about my situation. But I want you to think about this in the context of what we're talking about this morning. The year 2004, I had that big health scare, and I couldn't get rid of chest pain. And my general practitioner said to me at the time, "Joel, you're going to have problems in the future. You need to do two things right now. You need to lose weight, and you need to eat better." In fact, what he said to me was, he said, "You're a pear." And I said, "What?" He said, "You're shaped like a pear." he said, "If I saw your mom and dad, I can guarantee you at least one of them shaped like a pear." They both were. He said, "You got to lose weight and eat right." I didn't listen to him. In 2005, I had to have a heart cath done. The cardiologist said, "You better start eating right." 2008, another one. They fixed something. While they were in there, they looked around and said, "You better start eating right." 2014, had another one done. They said, "You better start eating right." I'm not sure, but I think I had one since I met you in 2018. Not sure of that one. But in 2022, just a couple years ago, same deal, heart cath, eat right. And then this year I go in there, and what happens? I get a stent. 20 years go by. And right now I'm starting to eat right. Have I been so long with you and you still don't get it? Yesterday, Janice had a funeral for a high school teacher of hers. She went back home, and she had volunteered to watch Easton, so the task fell to me. When the task falls to me, things are far different than when Janice is in charge. So Easton came over, and I said, "Buddy, we got to get you something to eat. What would you like?" He said, "Chick-fil-A." I said, "Easton, do you know what? You're going to have a heart attack." He's 8 years old. looked at me. I said, buddy, let me tell you what happens. You eat that, the oil goes into your stomach. When it goes into your veins and your arteries, it damages your arteries, and it'll want to form like a scab thing over that, and that'll ultimately become a clot. And the next thing that will happen is you will have a heart attack. He said, Papa, just take me to Chick-fil-A. I said, Easton, you understand, you got to start eating more vegetables, you got to eat more green stuff, you got to lay off the sugars and the fats. And he said, Papa, he said, protein's good for you. I said, you can get protein out of plants. He said, Papa, some fat's good for you. And he said, besides, do you think they'd really give us all this stuff to eat if it wasn't good for us? And I about lost it. You know what Adam and Eve did in the garden? They listened to somebody say to them, the day you eat from that, you'll be like God. And they got themselves into a big mess. And you know what we do? We argue all the time with God the same way. Just like I argue with the heart doctors, just like I, for 20 years, put it off, just like my grandson's telling me, because honest to goodness, church, I've read the numbers. Kids in high school today have heart disease. They didn't used to have that, but it's because of the way our system's set up to eat. But you and I do it in our spiritual lives. Because we come every week and we proclaim to know who Jesus is. But when it really comes down to brass tacks, we'll let the argument go by this way. Well, I'm not going to forgive her because she didn't ask for forgiveness. I'm not going to reconcile with him because he hit me first. I'm not going to do what Jesus would have me to do because they aren't acting like Jesus and they're going to treat me that way. And you can laugh and say whatever you want about what I'm saying to you right now, church, but I want to tell you what it's evidence of. It's evidence of that we've claimed we've known Jesus this long and we don't have a clue of who he is. Because if it was lived out correctly in our lives, we wouldn't be asking the question like Philip asked here. Show us the Father and that'll be enough. We would say, oh gee, we see how you live your life, Jesus. And we now know what God's like. And we're going to live our life just like you. But just like the doctor, I'll have to listen to that till I'm really in a jam and laying in the ICU. Just like anything else, I don't have to worry about eating correctly until the day arrives that I actually have a heart attack. And one day it won't be a heart attack, it'll be the judgment seat of God, and he'll step down and say to us, you were in that church for 35 years, 45 years, 55 years, and it never took hold. Let me ask you a question. Do you know what it means when I say to you, I never knew you? Because you're about to find out. You may say, good night, Joel. You're being awful, awful tough on that notion today. Well, we ought to be. Here's the question. How long's enough? How long's enough? I have sat with some really good people. And by the way, you know, I sent an email to my doctor not long ago. And when I sent him the email, the subject heading for the email was this, physician, heal thyself. Maybe we ought to address that to ourselves. Because here's the question I've got this morning, church. How long's enough? Jesus asked Philip the question, how long have I been with you? And you still don't get it. I've been with you for 3 years. How long is it going to be enough? Is it going to be one sermon or will it be 10 sermons? Will it be 100 people to forgive or just one person to forgive? When's it going to take hold? Jesus says, I've been with you 3 years already. I have been with people, and I've taken notice of this lately. It's probably because I'm getting older. I've been with quite a few people who have lived their lives either serving the Lord in the role that I serve in, or people who serve in the local church, and they get to the end of life, and it is so very tragic that families have to ask the question, I don't know what their eternal destiny was. Or they have to get to where they have to ask the question, I'm not sure that I've spent my life, I'm not sure deep down in my heart that I know that I know that I know that I've really served Jesus. That's kind of tragic, isn't it? How long is enough? Or you get the person who's done the mission trip, taught the Sunday school, served on the board, and they get to a place in life where a bump comes along and it throws them completely off kilter. I've seen that too. How long is enough? And so, church, here's the bottom line. The way you live reveals the God you know. Did you get that? The way you live reveals the God you serve and the God that you know. No excuses. I want you to think about this. Does every relationship, and again, I'm not telling you I've arrived. I'm telling you what the Word says. In your relationships, is there room for a question about what Jesus looks like in those relationships? Because if there is, I think we're like Philip, and Jesus is asking the question, how long's enough? Is there any relationship in your life or in mine that would cause us to question what our eternal destiny will be? Does your husband or wife, your child or your parent, your brother or your sister, your brother-in-law or sister-in-law, your aunt or your uncle, your niece or your nephew, your friend or your enemy, your neighbor, your coworker, does everyone in your sphere of influence right now know by the way you live that you know Jesus? Or is it okay to treat Robin that way? Because that's just Robin. Is it okay to treat Venetia that way? Because, well, that's a Venetia. You ever do that selectively in your life? That I'm going to walk with my Bible in this hand till it comes to this person, and then you can't do it? Well, I think the question's raised right there. How long's long enough? If your answer to that question, whether it's your husband, wife, friend, enemy, or whoever, is no, if the evidence of Jesus in your life is missing in that relationship, here's my question. It's real simple. Why not? Because here's something, church, we ought to really pay attention to. If you can't love someone, they know who your God really is. If you can't forgive someone, they know who your God really is. If this morning you're holding a grudge on somebody, can I tell you something? God knows you're holding that grudge. As much as he didn't know who you wouldn't forgive, as much as he knew who you wouldn't love, it reveals who our God really is. If you are controlled this morning by what Bill would call a habit or a hang-up, that reveals who your God is. And there's one thing I'm pretty certain about. Philip wasn't that stupid, and neither are we. We know who our God is. But how tragic that those around us can see it as well. They know it because we don't forgive, we don't love, we ignore them when we need to, and we look nothing like what Jesus looks like. And not only do they know it and we know it, God knows it. So church, here's the question. How long is long enough? For Jesus' disciples, he gave them 3 years. And after those 3 years, he said to them, I'm going away. And Thomas argued about it, and Peter argued about it, and Philip argued about it. And Jesus' reply was quite simple. You've been with me and you've seen me. You know what God looks like. Now you go do it. And that was for you and me as well, church. You know how Jesus did it? He went to a cross and died. I'm not going to forgive him until he asks for it. You know what that is? A failure to die to yourself. I'm not going to love her until she loves me. You know what that is? It's a failure to love like Jesus loved. It's making yourself your own God. I'm not going to. Anything that looks like Jesus, I'm not going to do until they conform to what I think they ought to look like. And the issue is not what they look like. The issue is what we look like. Because we claim to be the Christian. The way we live our life reveals the God we know. Amen. Let's stand and sing together.